I'm Paula Gordon. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell is with me, and we are with Dr. Dennis Burton, who is a researcher at the Scripps Research Institute. I don't want to get to humans quite yet. I want to continue to talk a little bit, if you will, about the fact that we are not isolated from this, that if, for instance, a virus were to wipe out all of the horses in the world,
right,
we're in trouble.
Right.
If it were to wipe out all the pigs in the world.
Right.
So that the concentration on humans, while it's easy to say, well, I don't want to get sick and I want my family well, this really is much more complicated than just taking care of people, isn't it?
Right. You mean from the point of view that the virus could jump from those species, or you mean from the point of view of the animals themselves?
Well, both, really, because right. If you look at flu, for instance, it comes from chicken and swine and whatever,
right.
And then we get it, so it affects us directly. But
right.
But if you were to have a serious infectious event among other populations,
right.
It also, does it not?
Well, I mean, the classic example is the mad cow disease in the United Kingdom.
That not everybody knows about mad cow, but I think they will now.
Yes, well, I mean, that is an infectious disease that infects cows. That's basically lost the United Kingdom billions of cost them billions of dollars in slaughtering very large numbers of cows.
Because people won't eat them because they're sick, or at least there's that fear. Is
well,
that how
there's
it goes?
A fear, and also I think it's fairly clear now that there's been an increase in the United Kingdom in the past few years, or not an increase, but a new disease, which is related to a brain disease known as CJD or Jakob Creutzfeldt disease. And the new disease is called variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, VCJD. And it's fairly clear that the cause of that disease is linked to cattle with BSE or mad cow disease. So it seems that eating cattle can lead to cattle that are infected, can lead to, or beef that's infected, can lead to this disease. I think most people now believe there is that link. The risk may be very, very small, something like 50 individuals at the current time have died of this disease in the United Kingdom, but nobody knows whether that is, we're now at the peak of of the epidemic, or whether this is just the very, very beginning, because the incubation times on this sort of disease can be 30, 40 years. So we may be looking at tens of thousands of people who may ultimately die. We just don't know.
This takes us, I think, to what you do, which is trying to find ways around, you know, how to respond to those kinds of things. And it's personal to us. We happen to be in England in the mid-90s.
Yeah, well, it's personal to me because I'm English.
But I saw an announcement someplace that they don't want me to give blood.
Ever.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
Or at least until somebody, which,
because,
you know,
we happened to be there during a time, and yes, we had hamburgers.
1986, around then, was it? Or mid-80s?
Yeah, well, whatever. We're just not supposed to give blood ever.
And that seems like a real stretch. I mean, you know,
right. It's an extremely defensive measure, but it's probably at this point justified. Nobody has shown at this point that you can spread prion diseases in blood, or clearly shown that.
But
on the other hand, you know, prudence is probably better here, and it has enormous impact not only on you know, in this case, mad cow disease, but it has an impact on the whole nation. So in the United Kingdom, you can see that it's caused quite a mistrust of government advice when it relates to some of these public health issues. So, and you can see something of the backlash of that in the current discussions on genetically modified foods. I mean, I think some of that reflects the fact that the population feels they were misled over mad cow disease, because politicians came out and said very categorically that there was no link, and
they were wrong.
They were most likely wrong.
Well, there's also this is one place where the French and the British seem to be standing toe to toe just now. I mean, it's like the bad old days or the good old days, depending on your preference. But the French are just still adamant that they are not interested in having, you know,
right,
British beef imported at least into France.
Right, that's true.
So there are all kinds of implications.
There are all sorts of implications, and I mean it's particularly, I mean, a particularly nasty feature of this new variant CJD is that it tends to affect much younger people. So you have relatively young people dying of this, you know,
and it's
really
awful. And it's a nasty disease.
Well, it's always fatal, and it's extremely nasty.
Well, and getting to fatal is not. It's not pleasant.
Right.
There's another example of this that, not to dwell on all the negatives, but at the time that HIV was just beginning to be identified, and whether or not it was in blood supplies, and there were a lot of public health issues, which is part, I think, of what we need to be thinking about as we think of the antiviral activities. But it is much easier to just go into a state of denial and say, no, it's not there and everything's fine.
Right. It clearly is a very hard call. And, you know, the care that's now being taken, say, in the United States that you've mentioned, I'm sure that's influenced by the fact that, you know, in France there was a lot of debate about the safety of the blood supply, and there have even been French scientists who's been to jail over that issue, and it clearly is extremely hard calls to make. You know, I mean, there's a certain risk involved. At the same time, if you deny people blood, you know, there's a risk in that as well. So they're definitely not easy calls.
This is not simple.
And that's why you need as much information as possible.
Yeah,
because
then
you can make rational, good judgments.
You mentioned the money that's been put into AIDS research, and I don't know that you said it explicitly, but it would seem that part of that is the knowledge that goes around with that. It's not just a matter of learning about the HIV virus, that it's also the body of knowledge that is generated along with
Absolutely.
That, which makes you better able to cope with things
Everything.
We haven't seen
which
yet.
Which gets to the antiviral activities of human
Everything.
Antibodies.
Yes.
Right? Which
yes.
is the work you do.
Right, yes. I mean, well, actually, in the early 90s, a new way of making antibodies was developed at my institute, the Scripps Research Institute, and also in Cambridge in the United Kingdom. And basically, the idea was to take the genes of from people and move them, antibody genes, the genetic information that codes for the antibody protein. Antibodies are proteins that are found in the blood that bind to viruses and bacteria and basically clear them out of the body. So they are a protective mechanism. They are a protein that exists in the blood. And the problem is that there are enormous mixture of different antibodies in the blood of any individual, and it's very hard to separate one from another. But that's what in essence you need to do, because an antibody against measles will not be any good against rabies, and so on and so on. So you have this huge number of different proteins that are all very closely related, but a bit different. So you want to find a way to get what we call the specific antibodies. So, you know, if you're interested in protecting people against rabies, you need to get that antibody. And the way in which we approached this was to go in and rescue the genes, the DNA that codes for the antibodies, to move those genes into bacteria, and then get the bacteria to make the antibodies for us. And what we could do was to make large libraries called of different antibodies, and then we could go into those libraries just as one would go into a library and pull out a book. You could go in and pull out a particular antibody at will, and we basically developed that technology, which is now widely used, and it allows you to go and get human antibodies from these libraries that you make in the laboratory.
For all kinds of diseases?
For all kinds of diseases, and even from one person. You know, you make a library from one person, and that library contains the history of all the antibodies that anybody's ever made, and then you can go back and pull them out. And so, I mean, as an example of where we've done that against Ebola virus.
Let's come back and talk more about that. And Ebola probably is the best example at the moment. Our guest is Dennis Burton. He is a researcher at the Scripps Research Institute. Bill Russell and I are with him in Taos, New Mexico. Please be with us when we return in just a moment.